Let's start with our first guest, another fascinating docuseries that came out just recently. Michael Jordan, you know, he's without doubt one of the most famous sports figures in Chicago and maybe all over the world. Everywhere I go, I say I'm from Chicago, and I don't care if I'm in the Vietnam or Cambodia or South Africa or wherever I am, people will say Michael Jordan, Chicago. In 1993, as you recall, there was shocking news that Jordan's father, James, was murdered at a rest stop in North Carolina by two teenagers who were ultimately convicted. To this day, they maintain their innocence. And now, almost 30 years later, Amazon has released a five-part docuseries called Moment of Truth. And it reexamines the case. It reexamines who the accused are, the initial crime, courtroom proceedings, and some of the questions that are raised about this really interesting case. And with us to discuss the documentary is one of the directors, Matthew Panisario. He's a director, writer, and producer based in L.A. And I want to welcome him to the show. Hi, Matthew. How are you?
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to say congratulations. This is really, really well done. I have a little bit left of the last episode, so I'm going to go home after the show and finish it up. But just congratulations on a really nice piece that you did here.
Thank you. It was over a 3-year process between the investigation and relooking at all of the evidence, and then obviously structuring and filming and editing the documentary.
And you know, it's really beautifully done. And again, one of the things that I want to say is that there's a timeliness to this, and I'm not sure that you, when you were first starting the project, maybe even were aware that this would come out at a time when we're watching the Derek Chauvin trial, which has to do with racial injustice in our criminal system. And here there's a story here about James Jordan and the two young men who were accused and convicted of the crime and some of the racial injustice going on. But is it kind of surprising to you that this timing is kind of perfect?
Yeah, I think the fact that the Derek Chauvin trial is taking place in the same week that we released the series was obviously something that you couldn't predict. But I think one of the things we've always talked about with this story of the murder of James Jordan and the case and the investigation that followed is ongoing issues that we have in our society of corruption in law enforcement and systemic racism in the criminal justice system. And those, we really viewed this case in many ways as almost a gateway to having those larger conversations. I've said this in the past about this case, is looking at this footage from anywhere between 25 and 35 years ago, it's pretty sad when you look at it all and you say we're still dealing and grappling with the same issues in these systems that we've set up that we were almost 30 years ago. And that was a kind of a core tenet to telling this story, the fact that it's happening again at this specific time where we're having this public conversation, you know, it's kind of a sad reminder of how much progress we still need to make.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, Matthew, I'm going to have you set up the crime because it has been 30 years. I covered this as a legal analyst, and some of the facts I don't recall being reported exactly the way the docuseries reminds me were the facts. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about the great new docuseries called Moment of Truth, and we're here with Matthew Panisario, who's one of the directors. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show, and you're also listening to WGN.
They were as close as any father and son could hope to be.
I'm lucky to be a part of what he is, what he stands for, and what he's doing right now.
This is the father of the most famous athlete on the planet, Michael Jordan. And on his 57th birthday, he was an unidentified dead man in the swamp in the middle of nowhere.
The body has been positively identified as Mr. James Jordan.
Welcome back. That was an excerpt from the new five-part docuseries, Moment of Truth, which reexamines the case of the murder of James Jordan, father of Michael Jordan, the beloved basketball player. And here with us to discuss it is one of the directors, Matthew Panisario. Thank you again for joining. Can you set up the crime for our listeners? What happened? And tell me how the two young men were accused of this murder.
Yes. So in July of 1993, James Jordan was leaving a funeral of a family friend in Wilmington, North Carolina, and driving to Charlotte, North Carolina, which is where the Jordan family now lived. he stopped in an area called Lumberton, North Carolina, to pull over to the side of the road, and that is in Robeson County. The public narrative that has always surrounded is that there was a carjacking robbery that went awry, and these two teenagers were convicted of the crime, Larry Demery and Daniel Green. And that is the case that, you know, the prosecution, that's kind of formed the public narrative that we know about this case, you know, and has been reported about this case, is that these two teenagers were convicted of the crime and charged and convicted. And then Larry ultimately took a plea deal acknowledging his involvement in the case, but as part of that plea arrangement stated that Daniel is the one who actually killed James Jordan. Daniel, on the other hand, has maintained his innocence in saying not only did he not pull the trigger, he was not present when James Jordan was killed. He did admit to helping Larry after the fact dispose of the body, but he has always maintained his innocence as being a part of the murder itself.
And, you know, it just seems to me, and for some reason, I remember the crime differently. I remember that I thought that James Jordan was found in the car, but he was found in a swamp actually across the state line in North Carolina. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was actually so Robeson County, where the crime occurred, is on the southern border of North Carolina and South Carolina. So the body was actually found in South Carolina, and when the body was found, it was a John Doe. He was he was not identified. So the autopsy took place with him as a John Doe. They kept certain identifying materials for dental records and fingerprints, but had cremated the body. So there was a lot of questions. And that was not uncommon practice. I think that needs to be made clear. You know, when a body was a John Doe at that time in that region of the country, that was kind of their standard operating procedure. James Jordan's car was found about 2 weeks later, and that is really what kind of set off this intense manhunt trying to find out what happened. And ultimately, the John Doe body that was found in South Carolina was identified as Mr. Jordan.
You know, like many high-profile crimes where there is a crime that people are outraged about, and I think the docuseries does a good job of really talking about the fact that North Carolina was extremely proud, as they should have been, of Michael Jordan and his family. You know, he played basketball there. He was from there. He was good to the community. And they were outraged, and the law enforcement included wanted someone to be convicted of these crimes. But you see these kinds of crimes where there's a rush to judgment or a focus on people right from the beginning in order to solve the crime. What do you think that was a big piece of what happened here?
Well, I think it was a very kind of complicated scenario from the beginning, because you have, you know, the body is found in South Carolina, in Marlborough County, South Carolina. The crime, because of cell phone records, they're able to very quickly determine that the crime took place in Robeson County, North Carolina, and then the car was found in Cumberland County, North Carolina, which is a neighboring county. So you had three different county law enforcement agencies and two state-level law enforcement agencies all kind of trying to figure this out quickly. And, you know, communication didn't operate the same way that it does now. So there was a lot of misinformation that was coming out from various departments. And what we delve into in this is that there were also potentially ulterior motives on behalf of certain law enforcement agencies involved in this case to, you know, project certain, you know, aspects of the narrative. And, you know, again, there's many questions. I think one of the reasons this case has kind of been clouded in mystery for so many years is because the information that was being told to the public and the evidence that was being presented ultimately even at trial, it didn't add up. And what happened was, is, you know, when things don't add up, people start jumping to conclusions. And in this case, that led to people, even in the media, a lot of print journalism around the time was speculating about, you know, conspiracy theories and kind of going down these rabbit holes. And our interest in telling the story was to really look at all aspects of the case, present each side of the argument, you know, because Daniel Green also did not testify during his trial. So his voice has never really been heard on a mass scale until this series. So we really wanted to tell the story with a greater degree of investigative detail than we felt had ever really been done before.
We're talking to Matthew Parnassiaro, who is one of the directors of Moment of Truth. Can you just tell our listeners how they can access this docuseries?
Yes, the series is a five-part series. It's available for free either via Amazon, the Amazon Prime app, or via the IMDb TV app. IMDb TV is a new free streaming service that's part of the Amazon family, and it was really important for us that, you know, anyone would be able to access this series. So when we were talking with distributors, when this option presented itself, it was really exciting because, you know, you don't have to be a paid subscriber to watch this specific show.
Highly recommend this. It's very moving. It's disturbing in some ways, but I think it does speak to the larger problems that we have and that we're, as we talked about before the break, that we're watching right now play out in the Derek Chauvin trial. So, Matthew, the huge part of the story to me is where this crime occurred and where the investigation occurred. And as you said, there were three different counties involved, which may have impeded the progress a little bit or caused some skewed results. But it shows, you know, Robeson County, North Carolina, had a lot of corruption and a lot of problems. Can you just outline a little bit of some of the issues that this county had, very disturbing issues prior to the James Jordan case?
Yes, Robeson County was a very fractured place, especially at that time. I think, you know, it has improved, you know, the certain aspects of it have improved now as opposed to how it was 30 years ago. But it was very fractured. It was very divided racially between the black community, the white community, and the Native American community. And there was a substantial drug trade in the county. It's I-95, which runs from, you know, Florida all the way up to the Northeast to New York, runs directly through the county. So there was a lot of drug trade because it was nicknamed Cocaine Alley. And this created a situation where between the racial injustice in the county and the racial divide in the county combined with a substantial drug trade, there was a lot of criminal activity. It is now known, was not known at the time when this case was happening, that law enforcement was also heavily involved in the sheriff's department. And there was, in the early to mid-2000s, there was a sting operation called Operation Tarnished Badge, where 22 deputies were arrested for their connections in criminal activity. It's actually the same prosecutor, Johnson, the district attorney, Johnson Britt, who prosecuted the case against Daniel, also is the one who ultimately took down the corruption in Robeson County. So it's a very long, fractured history, and there's a series of killings at the hand of law enforcement, which are very questionable. It was really important to us. The second episode of the series is about the entire history of Robeson County leading to this case, and we felt that audiences needed to have that context to understand everything you're going to see as it plays out. Because if you believe that there has been evidence, a history of evidence that has been mishandled, and there's misinformation coming from law enforcement, then you naturally have to question the evidence that law enforcement is putting forward in this case.
It's just astounding, actually. We have so little time, but I want you to just, if you can answer this quickly, Daniel Green is still in prison. Larry Demery, I believe, is still in prison. What are they doing, and when is their out date?
Larry Demery has been granted parole. His parole is granted for 2023, which is 30 years to the week of when they were arrested. Daniel Green has, for decades, been attempting to appeal his trial and to get an evidentiary hearing. The North Carolina Center for Actual Innocence, right when we were beginning to start work on this documentary, took Daniel's case on and took Daniel on as a client. And they have been appealing the courts for an evidentiary hearing. There's a lot of new evidence that has emerged. We discussed in detail in the series. But the state of North Carolina has refused to hear that trial as of right now.
My guess is that this docuseries is going to focus the spotlight on it. And as in the case of Making a Murderer, there was a lot of, you know, public outcry as to mistakes that might have been made. But it's going to be interesting to see how your documentary affects Mr. Green's appeals. Thank you so much for joining us, Matthew Panisiero, who is the director of a great docuseries on Amazon, Moment of Truth. Please, everyone, watch it. And thank you for joining us, Matthew.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
All right. You take care.